All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining the Identity Implementers Working Group call for today. We'll go over the status updates, and then Horacio Nunez is returning to give us a presentation demonstration on a new open source tool that he's got to connect biometrics with SSI backend services. And so I think that's really neat. And so I've got a couple of questions for him, and we'll enjoy that in the later part of the call. For starters, we've got the Linux antitrust policy. Basically, it says that we are a collaboration of cooperating competitors, I guess is what it says. And so anything that's relevant and beneficial to the community, please please contribute, please share and interact. Anything that's proprietary, requires NDAs, patent protected, copyrights, that kind of stuff. Let's leave that out of the call for another time. And let's have a good set of discussions today. Let's see. Firstly, is there anyone who is attending today that has not attended before that would like to introduce themselves? And all righty. So I've put the link to the wiki that you're seeing right now. I'll put that in the Zoom chat. Please feel free to log onto that page and sign the attendee list. That helps us know who's attending and allows us to contact you should the need ever arise. So please feel free to do that. That's appreciated. Also, by way of announcements, let's see, the first one coming up for the Internet Identity Workshop number 33 is going to be online now in October 12th through the 14th. I've put the link there so that you can sign up for that. That, if you haven't gone, is kind of the existential identity conference. It covers all sorts of things, all the things we're talking about, a wide variety of identity topics. I would encourage you to attend. It's fairly cost effective and it's online, so there's no travel costs this time around. The word I'm getting is that the spring conference to be held in about April will be online, in person. And I don't know if it's going to be dual online, but like a hybrid conference, but they're shooting to get us all back together at the Computer History Museum in California. So look forward to that. The Good Health Pass, I've got it listed as a draft here. I need to update that. That was actually recently approved for release by Trust Over IP. And so the completed Good Health Pass interoperability blueprint is available for your review. The link right there, thegoodhealthpass.org, is where you will be able to find that. And then I will update this link to make sure it's the most current one. Couple of things that, thank you, Daniel. Daniel posted the link to the Good Health Pass in the chat. And so I'll copy that over as well. Couple of things that have happened there. Kiva has released a kind of a proof of concept on GitHub for ND interfaces to the Diem ledger. And so I put that there, that link in the chat. It's important to kind of be compatible with all sorts of ledgers. Because credentials and things will be anchored in various places. So that's a really cool addition. Nathan, you're on the call. Did I do that justice?
No objection.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd encourage you to take a look at that. The code's available for you to compile and use there. Let's see. Trust over IP, Saturn 5 testing. I put a link there. That's something that I haven't really had on this page before. But interoperability is one of the key things facing all of us, regardless of what flavor of SSI you're using. And so I just dropped that in there. And then I'll take a look more at that and see if we want to include that in updates down below. Cardia is another one of those groups that I just came across that it's a health credential related group. And so that I dropped that in the chat. Does anybody participate in either the interop testing group or the Cardia group that would want to give a better update? I just came across the link, so I wanted to bring them to as a point of note. Okay, looks like we're all in the same boat there. So feel free to check those out. Now here in the Northern Hemisphere, we are at the end of our summer. And so a lot of groups have taken kind of the last little part for summer vacations and so forth. And so they've postponed having some of the meetings. The main identity group has been on summer vacation, but I think they're getting ready to kick it off here again in September. We talked about this one before, the EIDAS was the last discussion they had back in the end of June. Let's see, did anyone happen to attend the Indie Contributors Working Group here recently?
Wait, is that the one that Vipin normally hosts? Is that?
Vipin hosts the main identity group.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one that, as you said, was on summer hiatus. Okay, that's why I was asking, because that one didn't happen. I'm not aware of the other one. Sorry.
The ACOL did happen this week. We had an interesting presentation on fat protocols and thin protocols, which are in the notes. Which call are we saying did not happen?
Oh, the main identity working group, the one that Vipin hosts.
Oh, yes. Apologies.
Yeah, that one's been on. I leave it in the notes because it's an important one. But that was the last meeting they had there at the end of June. Any updates from the Indie Contributors call? What I've observed is they are nearly complete on the CI/CD pipeline, and there's just a couple of last minute things that they're fixing up for ND Plenum for Ubuntu 20.04. And they're in progress right now on ND Node updates. So those things are in progress. There's been a couple of questions about the asynchronous version of libnd, the next iteration of ND SDK. And so there's a link there. I think that's still in progress, but that'll help with asynchronous calls to the wallet and so forth. So the other thing that happened is there's a consensus to move libvcx outside of the main ND SDK. That'll be good. It'll make the Indie SDK smaller, but then libvcx will be there as well. And then there's kind of a question about whether the CLI should be in its own standalone repository. Probably not a bad idea. All right. On the ACOL, Nathan, you mentioned the discussion of FAT protocols based on DIDCOM. That was a very interesting discussion. Do you want to give us a quick update on kind of an overview of that?
One of the key premises from a kind of a business model standpoint for self-sovereign identity, and indeed a lot of the blockchain identity, is that by making an interoperable protocol for information exchange that's based on the decentralized systems that we've constructed, you end up creating a platform that's not owned by any one use case or any one party. And that opens us up to build a lot of things that are hard to build or and have interoperability that that right now creates a lot of user friction. One of the best examples that was given in the slide deck presentation was that of transportation and taxi apps. If you've traveled to different cities around your own country, around the world, you'll know that everybody has their own parking and taxi and transportation apps. And if you have to install all of them, it gets to be ridiculous really quickly. But when we have a protocol that's interoperable for sharing information, when we can dynamically compose things based on the signatures of the trust that comes from the fat protocol layer, it makes it so that the application layer can be thin and a use case can be compatible across the globe based on the interoperability that the protocol provides. And that raises a bunch of new challenges, right? It means that we need a protocol that has some convergence that creates that type of interoperability. But when we understand how that changes the potential outcomes, it gives us a lot more options for how we architect our systems.
Yes, thank you. I think that's quite exciting. I love the protocol approach. You make a good point, as was brought out in the presentation, all the different transportation apps for the, you know, different cities have that. We're kind of experiencing the same thing with health credentials due to COVID in large measure. I'm watching different cities, different states. I live in the US in the state of Utah. The state of Utah just partnered with one vendor that's only partnered with one other state at this time. And so carrying those credentials within the state is probably maybe going to be useful, but getting that protocol interaction will be a lot better. And then we can have various applications that you might want to use, but make them interoperable. And so, you know, we're seeing airlines with COVID credential initiatives. We're seeing, different nations, different requirements for border crossing and so forth. And so that gets kind of unwieldy, that you have to plan your trip, decide where you're going, decide what cities, states, or countries that you'll be passing through, and then collect all the apps accordingly, and then try to figure out how to get your credential in all of those apps. And so that, I think, and with health and transportation both, we're starting to see that that's getting out of hand. So this protocol presentation, I put the link right here under the ACOL. I would very much recommend taking a look at that, because I think that's the direction we kind of want to go. A good analogy there also is like email. Email is a standard, and so whatever client you happen to be on, you can talk to the other clients. And I think that to me is the beauty of DIDCOM and where that's going. So it's not just a secure communication protocol, it's a protocol slash platform you can build upon.
Well, and that's one of the interesting concerns too, because a lot of mobile platforms had this idea with HyperCard and others, where every app would be able to talk to every other app, and you would compose things, you would compose use cases using the functionality of a wide variety of apps. And that never really materialized, because the practicality of testing and deploying something that was outside of your control just got to be too much. And so, you know, one of the challenges we have as a community is trying to define how that's going to work in a practical way. How do we actually get to where we have composable protocols where several vendors provide different components of that protocol? This is an area where the semantic web had a lot of ideas on how that should work in an ivory tower way. And really the thing that broke it open was just the simple idea of the SRC equals attribute on image and anchor tags, right? We need to get to some simple loose coupling that allows us to have composable systems. And that's really the hope of what we're getting at in the ARIES discussions.
Definitely so. I think this is a series of discussions that's well worth watching. And As we keep saying, interoperability is key, and that's exactly what this is addressing. All right. Did anyone attend the Aries B call yesterday? Want to give a quick update on that?
I did. We talked about changes to the, as Bruce asked earlier, changes to the call. We have fewer folks participating these days from the Asia Pacific region and more folks in the European time zone that would like to be involved. And so Robert and I talked. I apologize for all the coughing. Robert and I talked, and we're going to combine the calls into a weekly call during the A slot time. And so we'll work out the details of that, but that earlier time is going to be much more friendly to folks in Europe, and hopefully we can include some better attendance there and help them be more actively involved in stuff. We also talked about connection reuse came up, and also we had a sort of a beginning discussion about JSON-LD credentials and what types of support various projects are either have or seeking to add, and what, you know, how deep down the LD rabbit hole do you go in order to gain that support. So that was our meeting yesterday.
So is the JSON-LD discussion, will that be an ongoing discussion then?
Likely, but it's nuanced because this is like a dependent technology that has issues that still need to be worked out, of which are not the working group's responsibility. So it will be an ongoing discussion about how we want to apply the work that is being done, not really fixing or addressing those concerns directly within it.
Well, and this is maybe where I'd like to add something, which is, it's important if you're interested in the success of this part of the technology to try to figure out how to help, because right now the JSON-LD technology base, it does a bunch of things that are in conflict with the basic premise of verifiable credentials, or more specifically, privacy preserving verifiable credentials. And if we can articulate the problem in the right way, I think we have the community will and the community desire to fix it. But right now, a lot of the entities involved are talking past each other or hoping that someone else at a different layer of the stack will magically solve the problems for them, or are ignoring the problems altogether. And I feel like if we can get everyone talking to each other, and if we can get more clear and crisp about where the limitations are, not only will we make a system that works, but we'll be able to articulate and explain to others where it works well and where it doesn't work at all. And that will, if we do it right, it'll really contribute to our success. And if we kind of just hope for the best, we'll be limping along for quite a while.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. The Aries Bifold user group has met. Did anyone attend that wants to give a quick update? All right. What I gleaned, I didn't attend the group, but I do review the proceedings. The Aries framework JavaScript has a new release right there, which is noteworthy because the last one had the label of kind of unstable. And so the fact that they're to alpha is really exciting. So please feel free to take a look at that. Now, I did notice in their notes this kind of block right here that they're doing an indie wallet overhaul. I wasn't quite sure what that meant. Has anybody followed it enough to know where they're headed with that? All right, I'll see if I can reach out to one of their members and get an update there. Aries agents, the Python users group, they have a 0.070 has been released, and they're working on an update to that. Various updates on the shared components and so forth. I have given the attention it's getting. I've broken out the framework JavaScript meetings and some of their code repositories that they have right there. So these links are available. Let's see. Another update was from URSA. Did anyone happen to attend those meetings recently? So this got my attention. They're talking about a potential BBS plus LD proof vulnerability. That was new to me as I was making these notes. Has anybody kind of heard that? I don't know enough about it to make any intelligent comments right now.
This is a little bit what I've been referencing in some of the other discussions. The way canonicalization works and the way some of the other aspects of LD signing works involves global unique identifiers, and they're not blinded the way you would expect when you try to roll them up into a proof presentation. And there's a bunch of consequences to that. And there's an interesting debate on what the exact or precise requirements are for the signature scheme, because you could argue that it's not a vulnerability, or you could argue that it's a fatal vulnerability, depending on what your requirements are for the BBS plus signature. Meaning, if you're expecting that the BBS plus signature is providing some sort of blinding to the data that's being passed along, this would be bypassing that guarantee. But if your expectation is that no such blinding is expected nor required, then it changes the discussion on what needs to be done about it. So it's been an interesting debate, but it's one that I think has cross concerns with what's going on with the Verifiable Credentials Data Model Group, and also with what's going on with DIDCOM's discussions about how privacy is expected to work. So it's one of the reasons why I keep saying we need to have some clear and crisp communication between the groups about what we're expecting, or a lot of these efforts are going to stall.
Got it. Okay, that clarifies a lot. When in a previous occupation, I was did red team work, and so when I see the word vulnerability, it kind of elicits thoughts in my mind. And so, thank you for clarifying what that actually is. It's depending on how you look at it. Yes, it could be or could not be a vulnerability. So, it's not a problem with the crypto. It's not a problem with the algorithm per se. It's just where the privacy might lie, given the way they're doing their signatures.
Well, and there are a few other aspects beyond that that I have not been paying as much attention to. The thing I mentioned is the thing I think we have the most ability to influence and improve. There are other lower level crypto details that you need to talk to Brent and Mike and Hart about.
Okay, I'll see if I can touch base with them and get up to speed on that. Thank you. All right. Trust over IP has done a lot recently. So for those of you who are maybe new on the call, Trust over IP is a governance standards body. It's spread quite broadly across several efforts, and it typically deals at the governance level. So kind of what that means is things that we build here with DIDGOM and Hyperledger Aries and Indy and stuff like that kind of become referenced parts of Trust over IP standards. So Trust over IP doesn't write code and things like that. It just worries about the standards processes. And so there was a all members meeting. I won't go into the details back on August 18th. There's a discussion about trust registries and how those are used with verifiable credentials. And so we have our typical three participant model. And is there a fourth participant, namely a governance authority that needs to participate in that, such as a government border system, that kind of thing. So I put the slides there on for you to take a look at. There's a recording there as well. The steering committee had a lot of administrative issues, which I won't take the time to go into. But I've for all the sub working groups here, I've put links for the groups, their current proceedings. Some have taken. Oh, I need to update this. Anyway, those are there for you. The big deliverable that's happened recently has been the Good Health Pass working group. Here is the new link that I need to add up above. And so that's been made available as of the end of July. So Daniel posts in the chat. Do you want to give a comment on that?
Yeah, sure. Just as the comment says in the chat, we've updated the General Trust Over IP website, and we added, so to make it more readable, we've added, the work we're working on, including, the Good Health Pass Collaborative. And the specific link I put in the chat is this interactive model of the four-layer stack that many of you may have seen, showing the two halves, like the governance half and the technology half, and left and right halves, and then the vertical four layers being the utility layers, layer one, then the comms layers, layer two, the wallet layer or exchange layer as level three, and then the fourth layer being the enterprise layer. But if you have some time, I'd click on that link for the model, and then you could drill down to various levels in each of those eight domains, basically the four layers and the governance side and the technology side. It's kind of cool, and any feedback that you have is welcome. But anyhow, that was it.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I'll put that link here in the meeting notes as well.
Cool.
All right. Any updates from DIDCOM working group?
Good progress on PRs there. And the next week will be a bunch of editorial style changes as well to sort of clean up the flow of the spec.
Excellent. Thank you. All right, the interoperability group is on summer vacation. So they posted a note that they will be back on September 1st. So we'll catch up with them here shortly after their next meeting. From the Sovereign Foundation, the lot of administrative issues going on right now. Obviously the main concern is the NDE release process. We talked a little bit up above, referencing the contributors call. There's a status document there for the Ubuntu upgrade that will catch you up on those release times. And they're working on, a lot of this is due to efforts from, BCGov and others, but we should have some actual release dates here before too long. Then there were some procedural and pricing updates for sovereign activities that were discussed. The Sovereign Steward Council is also on summer vacation, but I don't have the exact date, but we should be restarting here in the next week or two. Let's see, that's all I have for updates and coordination today. Anything that I might have missed that we should bring up right now?
Hey, Steve, this is Jim. Sorry I was a few minutes late. Excellent rundown as always. I see Good Health Pass working group there at the top, and I can offer Good Health Pass Steering Committee is kind of working on what version 2.0 is a Good Health Pass is going to look like. As well as kind of what the prospective next steps are for work. And out on the horizon, I'll just add, I was late because I and the members, the steering members for the US national body for TC307 and ANSI were kicking around a couple of political Machiavellian things that ISO is doing and what we were going to do on a couple of proposals. One of those is a work proposal I have that I had submitted The end of last year that still hasn't quite finished going through the process, which would introduce the TYP framework and the TC307, ultimately working towards an ISO standard. That hasn't been resolved yet, but will most likely result in something of a new work item, which would be a technical report. And that would begin to steer collectively, I can involve everything you've captured here into a technical report for ISO as part of TC307. So as that kind of materializes, hopefully rather soon, I'll be happy to brief you and you can add that to the agenda as well. So,
oh, absolutely. That would be great for you to come and give a update presentation, get us all up to speed on your efforts there. That I'll talk to you about that offline, but that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely, Steve.
All right. Anything else before we go to our presentation today? All right. Well, Horacio Nunez from Kiva has prepared a presentation on biometrics and SSI backends. And so, Horacio, if you're ready to go, I will stop sharing. And you should be able to grab the screen share. Are you all set up, Horacio, ready to go?
Yes. Give me a second. I'm just like closing all the tabs I have.
Okay. Yeah, if you're like me, you have, 87 tabs open in a variety of windows, and that slows things down.
He's backstage. He's trying to get the dancing girls and the midget arranged. Come on.
Okay.
Our arrangements are a problem.
It's mainly like I need to be able to find which browser has the content I want to show next. Okay, so this is the idea of the presentation is like we are going to show a desktop tool that we built for a use case in Sierra Leone. And then I'm going to walk you to kind of like deconstruct the architecture that we follow, like why we took certain decisions. And then I'm going to show you how this can be improved using open source components. And then I'm going to show you the code for those components.
Horacio, I'm sorry to interrupt. Could you give 30 seconds of an overview of your background? I'm just, when you're saying we developed, I just wanted the context of.
Sorry. My bad. So I work with the Kiva protocol team. When I say we, I mean the Kiva protocol team. We have been working on this over like 3 years now. We have an stack that goes from a desktop app for fingerprint sensors, a backend that is ready to use, a mobile app, and we also we're starting to do like some work on open sourcing our specific UI components for like an SSI web wizard or SVG credentials, for example. So in this case, we're going to be talking about like a desktop app that is basically a bridge between kind of like these sensors that usually they are like very much tied to the operating system layer. For secure devices, a bridge between that and the normal web apps and services that we have been using for the last 15 years in the industry.
Horacio, if I can add something there, I'm the director of engineering on the Kiva Microphones Kiva Protocol team. It's you can think of it from a business case as kind of a SSI in a box. It's an on ramp that lets an entire jurisdiction put their government ID cards online as a root of identity, and then onboard eKYC and other use cases that we believe will make a significant difference towards financial inclusion. And everything we're doing is using the Aries open source code bases and the open standards that are being developed in the community, because the idea is we want the financial inclusion use cases to be compatible with the healthcare use cases and the asset management use cases and the business registry use cases and all the other great things that are being built in the community. Because we believe that if we can get to network effect, we can make a real significant difference in how many people can be included in the financial system and what resources they can bring to bear to make a difference in their own lives and the lives of their community.
Awesome. Well, you can see kind of like a sketch of that connection, that kind of like what our solution does. I invite you to go to kivaprotocol.com to see more info of the project. And if you go to github.com/kiva, all our open source repos are there. Okay, so let's start with like a quick demo of these. Okay, so so this demo is about the use case that we did in West Africa. So you're going to see basically like someone coming to a bank and doing eKYC using an actual sensor.
Hi, welcome to EcoBank. Thank you very much. Okay, I want to open an account with EcoBank.
So you can see the device right here. This is like a Securian fingerprint reader. Securian has their own like a kind of like platform and product for matching. We didn't use any of that. We only use for the fingerprint device, and that's a standard.
Which card don't you want? Let's open coins account. Okay, well, for open coins account.
So this is the normal exchange between the bank teller and the client. I'm basically explaining that it's like a new way to get access to the account. I'm going to make a pause here like to explain that before we implemented this, an eKYC will take up to like 2 weeks to like a month, just because they will have to go to get like the electricity bill. It will take a lot of time. And now, and with our solution, we were able to get like using SSI, right? Using that certainty so that it will take like only one day.
Okay, but this information with the Shumaya, so you would like for me to display.
Yeah. So here you can see how our solution, right? There's like a website there has like terms of service. Like this is like mandatory to see. So that's the only way that you can get to the next steps.
Okay, we get on our EcoBank microfinance.
Yeah, no mind.
And so you see that that change to click in accept. And this is like an interesting example about like how the SSI features, right, play really well with like a legislative framework.
Hey, Horatio, I'm still seeing the kivaprotocol.com/solutions page. Is that what you're intending to share?
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. Okay. What about now?
Yeah, now I'm seeing the Nancy video.
Okay, sorry. Okay, let's start. Okay, so you can see the sensor there. And you can see in the computer web app, you don't see anything that is desktop here.
Okay.
And this is because many of the bank industry right now, they rely on web apps. We just need to have like a bridge to do it. And we cannot really do that from like a web prompt, for example.
Okay, I don't mind. Okay, I can take a look at it. Okay, but this information
really should I ask you? You will like asking for the approval. Let me fast forward a little bit here. So now the teller is going to type some of the info on their ID card, basically their ID number. See. Okay, so you can see there that this person is like asking to use the sensor, right?
Okay.
And then you can see that the UI is pretty clear, watch finger, they need to use. Okay, so you can see that there was like an EKYC on the screen. You saw like how it was like a very like effortless use of biometrics. You know, like the idea here is that to also improve the UX. So let me go back to the presentation. Okay. And just to be sure, you should be seeing the presentation agenda. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay,
on lucid.app, right?
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's now deconstruct like this demo. So basically what you saw is like there's like a source of truth, like, you know, like someone has to have this biometric, like in this case, it's come from like a voter ID, right? And then there is also a kind of like a whole assortment of like supporting apps, a web app in this case for the eKYC, and also a backend service to do the communication, right? So how do we interact with like a device that we know has to run like very close to the hardware abstraction layer? So the obvious choice is to use a local API that has some restrictions to ensure that it's secure. And then that app has to have like a certain services, right? One of them is, of course, interrupt a service to connect with the web runtime IT OAuth services. Like we need to be able that this app can be connected with the IT system of the bank, right? Like Active Directory for example, and also templating services. Like we don't want to be sending anything from this app that could be traced to an app. I mean, like to a raw format, right? That someone can use after to impersonate someone else. So this is like an important layer here and has to be matched. I mean, like this templating has to match whatever we are using for the source of truth. Here, like we go back more to the abstraction, right? Here you can see that I have like this section, like the vendor driver and also an industry standard abstraction. Like what this means is like, you know, like we really want to integrate with something like SecUgin, right? In like the best way possible, but we want to expose this in a way that is compatible with the industry. Like the templating services is only going to deal with a standard abstraction. And then this standard abstraction is going to have basically a grabber for each of these drivers. So basically an adapter pattern. So, and this device abstraction is, of course, is going to deal with the biometric sensors. What is interesting is like this is true, right? Not just for your fingerprint, but for your retina as well. And any other sort of like of biometric sensor that you can think of, you know, like we really want to support stuff that has templating. And if that doesn't exist, that means that that's not like something that is ready. So this is the kind of like the architecture. Now let's see how we see these components on the open source. So before we jump into that, let's just like review kind of like, if you need to build something like this, right? And the idea of these components is like, you never start from zero. And especially you don't start from zero and you're going to be doing something that is not safe, right? So we want to acknowledge that you may be starting a brand new app, right? Or you may be extending an existing app. For example, many banks, they have a model for this. In our case, we didn't use it because it would have taken longer. Supporting one bank would have like using this approach would have taken kind of like a lot of our time, and we just went with something like custom app, so that you don't have to deal with like building stuff from scratch, right? We have what we call like desktop kits. You can see that it's centered on the technology for people that have experience with Windows, right? WPF is kind of like the web, the UI framework that became popular, I think, with like Windows Vista. Right now, there is like a kind of like a more open source friendly version, kind of like a version of that on top of the new .NET that is called Avalonia. We have a shell for that as well. We are like starting to work right now on MAUI, which is kind of like superseding Avalonia, right? So the idea here is that you have enough of like entry places that you could support something that, let's say, for example, if your solution only has a Linux, right? Well, then you could rely Avalonia easily. If MAUI proves to be like a good thing, then you could use that as well. But pretty much make sure that you have a freedom of choice. And then we have like a basic login screen services, and of course the interop service, like to repeat myself, enforce templating services here. Now, let's talk about the specific secure biometric components. So here, this is kind of like an abstraction. So far we have found that this is true for any sort of like of biometric. You have the interop services that you need to support, the templating services, a specific driver. So we haven't implemented Retina, but this is going to be pretty similar as well. In fact, I wanted to talk about something that I learned in chemistry class many years ago that I think is pretty relevant here. So the periodic table, right, is supposed to be kind of like a visual representation and kind of like a way of order, right? And they use a property of the atom, right, to kind of like to index this. And you can see that this is like from 1917. And you see this kind of like empty spots there. The idea is like they knew there was going to be elements that they were going to fit here, and it was going to be only one of them, right? Like two elements cannot have the same atomic number. This is like from 79, right? Look now, something that is more like that you can buy now. You see, there's like way more there, right? So the way we are thinking about this is like, you know, we are basically, we know this stuff is going to emerge, and this is kind of like the schema that we are going to use, the common properties. So hopefully 5 years from now, if you need to build an SSI system that has biometrics, you don't start from zero. And more important, if you need to do something kind of like out of the ordinary, right? You already have a foundation there. So let me jump now to the actual code. And this is like a public, so you can download it. It's an Apache 2.0 license. So let's go here to the components. So let me show you here how this works with Secure Union. So for example, you can see here I have a fingerprint sensor. This is just a tagging interface. But if I go to the actual implementation, right? You can see it's pretty specific. I can tell you based off implementing this, this is not like an obvious code. There's like a lot of like handling of native work. And you can see here, for example, the template, right? This is also a not obvious, like this is like a driver, an extension of an open source library that we help produce. And you can see this in use. Let me go back here. In terms of OAuth, we have used Auth0, and Auth0 provides you kind of like if you connect your app to Auth0, then you can connect Auth0 to Active Directory of like your own legacy app. You know, like the sky is the limit with their pipeline. And you can see a very simple client to do that, that you could just use. You just replace your Auth client and your domain, and you are good to go. And let's hear on the API. This is a very interesting part of the app, because it basically makes your app be able to expose stuff to like a website, right? That you could control remotely. So you can see here, there's like a self-hosted API. Windows has a whole standard for that, is called OWIN. And we have kind of like this pre-configured for you. You can see we have the handlers for JSON. Again, this is very extensible as it is right now. What we're going to be doing in the future is like invest more in kind of like pluggable interfaces, so that, you know, when you have to do something custom, you don't need to kind of like fork. Like, we want you to be able to reuse, kind of like if you were using like Ruby on Rails. And I think that's it. Is there like any questions? Let me see the chat, please. Okay, no, there's like no one has raised their hand. So we have like 8 participants. Who has any questions here?
So thank you for presenting that. What do I need to do to run the tool? Is it standalone, self-contained, or are there other elements that hardware, whatnot, that I'd need to plug in?
I mean, if you want to use the fingerprint reader, you will have to have the reader. I can send you the Amazon link to that. Right now, we are like working on kind of like a development mode, so that you kind of like get access to that without having the device. I think this will be pretty helpful for integrations moving forward. But yeah, you can just like download the components and start using it.
Okay, great. And have you showed the video from that Sierra Leone from Africa? Is this tool deployed over there right now? Is that the tool? That's the tool we were seeing.
Yeah, we deployed this on the countryside. So we kind of like attest that it works with like our mobile, like AG3 connectivity. You can like update it, you say click once if you want to do that. You could use, you know, like after you put the tool together, it's like up to you to secure it. So, you know, if you have an obfuscator or something like that, you can put that into your pipeline and it just going to work.
Excellent. So I'm looking at this on GitHub right now, the same page you have on the screen here. Yeah. Is there some architectural documentation that goes along with it that could help people write plugins and such?
I don't think that we're like there yet, but you can see that we have started here with this presentation here in Lucidchart. So I'm going to turn this into documentation.
Okay. And will you drop that in the GitHub repo, or is there a place where we could get that?
I think it will be self-contained in the GitHub repo.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's really exciting. I love seeing modular applications and architectures where we can plug more in. That kind of goes along with the discussion we were having at the beginning of the call regarding protocols. And so it makes it easier to build in and on top of these platform services. Thank you so much for presenting today. Do any of you have any questions for Horatio while we have him on the call?
Great stuff, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, excellent, I enjoyed the presentation. Thank you so much. I will grab that link and I'll put those links in the chat, or not in the chat, but on the wiki page, so that those who watch us in recording can grab those as well. And if you have a link that you'd like me to add regarding the documentation, or you said you'd put it in the GitHub repo, that would be great. That'd help people follow along with the architecture. So thank you so much for joining us. Very much appreciated. And so I think that that's all the material that we had for today. Thank you so much for all the great discussion and for joining us. This call we meet at this time every 2 weeks. So I look forward to meeting with all of you in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much.
Thanks all.